I'm Vermont Edition producer Daniela Fierro, popping in to say we've edited this podcast a little for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Before we dive into the choppy waters of national and international news, let's linger for just a bit longer on the local. Yesterday, dozens of Vermont communities gathered together for town meeting day. We debated issues, voted on budgets, and ate soup together. Others of us cast ballots at polling places and then waited while local officials tallied results. Vermont Edition's intern, Anna Berg, spent town meeting day in Richmond, where residents voted on their budget using paper ballots for the first time this year instead of voting on the floor.
A lot of the decision ability for town meeting is getting eroded right now, being sent to secret ballot. And while that is great for more inclusion and all of that, it's sort of saddening to see that this direct democracy in person go away.
I personally really value the discussion, but I also really appreciate the point of people want to vote and they don't find it feasible to be here for like a chunk of the day.
It's really cute. It feels like a little movie. I don't know. It feels like everyone's really close.
It was great to see everybody seeing each other and talking to each other, and everyone is really passionate about like democracy and like having the fullest possible democracy in their town, whether that was through Australian ballot or coming in person.
For recent years, it's been about the same number of people, 130, 150. But if I go way back, like 80s, at that point in time, way more people, a higher percentage of the voters showed up. More people were able to take the day off, show up, spend the day. A lot of small towns in Vermont had like potlucks, so the food was pretty cool too.
This town meeting day had a lot less debate in it, which some people could view as less of a democratic process. I think it made it flow faster without as much problems or confusion.
It was all right. Can't really complain. Wasn't too long, especially now that we're kind of getting rid of a lot of the in-person stuff. You know, we're going to more Australian ballots than we are the old meeting style, which has its ups and downs. I was here last year, but I don't know if that's my first time. Was that my first time, Jeremy?
I don't think so.
Okay, he doesn't think so.
I think one of the biggest things was just the desire to keep a town meeting going and the community that's involved. And there's a lot of mixed feelings because you want everybody to be involved, so Australian ballot really works well. But on the other hand, you can lose the discussion and the understanding of what some of the issues are. And so we kind of went back and forth a lot on that. But it made me feel good that people value town meetings so much, however we can make it happen.
Richmond's town meeting was largely focused on local issues, as you just heard. But many of our reporters talked to Vermonters who voted with national politics in mind. Brattleboro, Brookfield, and East Montpelier residents approved a message to Governor Phil Scott to reaffirm his commitment to the rule of law and the Vermont Constitution amid federal overreach. And here are some voters in Rutland, Larry Walter and John O'Connor.
I was a federal employee for 41 years. And I worked really hard, and I don't like what this administration is doing in trying to convince people that somehow I was a waste of their precious money while I'm lugging 45 pounds of, you know, firefighting gear up a hill.
And the kind of messiness of politics right now is, I think, will seep down to local levels in some ways if people allow it to. And so that's my big thing, is that if you allow all the noise to confuse what's going on here, that's not good for people who are looking out for the Rutland area.
Now, President Donald Trump has called for major cuts to federal spending, which could ultimately affect the amount of money that towns can get from the federal government for things like road building or flood recovery. And yesterday wasn't just town meeting day. It was also the day that substantial new tariffs on Canada and Mexico went into effect. Last night, President Trump made his first address to Congress of his second term. Some Democratic lawmakers chose not to attend, including Vermont's representative to the U.S. House, Becca Ballant. Vermont's junior senator, Peter Welch, a Democrat, did go. I asked him why in a conversation we had this morning.
It's my job, and I also brought as my guest Allison Hope, who is going to be affected by the tariffs. She's the head of the Vermont Maple Sugar Producers Association. So I wanted us to be together and hear what the president had to say and be witness to the reality that these tariffs are going to be very, very hard on Vermonters.
Yeah, so let's start with the effect on Vermont's maple producers. How could these new tariffs affect that industry?
Well, there's two ways. Number one, all the equipment that our producers use primarily comes from Canada. It's aluminum products, so there's going to be a 25% increase in the cost of their equipment, and that is a big factor in whether at the end of the day they make a profit. And then number two, we actually have an incredibly cooperative relationship with Canada. You know, we, Vermont, produce the most syrup of any state in the country, but Canada produces the most syrup of any country in the world. And we actually blend it. So we're having Canadian syrup come down to some of our producers, and then it gets mixed into products. So that tariff is going to, it's going to do two things: increase uncertainty in price that we can pay, and I think really have a detrimental impact on profits. And of course, the sugar industry is becoming increasingly important for the well-being of the producers, but also a lot of our dairy farmers, where it's a component of their income that makes a difference about that family farm staying in business.
Mm. Yeah, that was my next question for you, Senator. Outside of the maple industry, do you see these tariffs having a particular impact on Vermont and some of the businesses that are along that northern border?
I do. And of course, we had a round table up in St. Albans. But first of all, we get a lot of our electricity from Canada, the Hydro-Quebec contract. So we could see significant higher electric bills for every Vermonter. And that is a tough expense for folks trying to balance their budget, their checkbook at the end of the month. Number two, we get a lot of our fuel. And there was a graph in the New York Times today that showed the New England region, particularly northern New England, could get about a 25 to 40 cent increase per gallon in the cost of gasoline. And then third, home heating fuel. A lot of that comes from Canada. So on really very essential bills, transportation, electricity, home heating, there's going to be an immediate impact that goes right to the family budget. Very tough.
Okay, so on that topic of domestic versus imported energy, last month the Senate voted to confirm Doug Burgum, who's the former governor of North Dakota, as the next Interior Secretary. And that department, for those who don't know, it manages public land and waters. And Doug Burgum is a strong supporter of President Trump's goal of extracting more oil and gas and minerals through methods like fracking. And his policy priorities, to me at least, seem very different from the energy policies that Vermont has set up for itself. Now, more than half of Senate Democrats voted to confirm him, yourself included, and that vote has drawn you some criticism here in Vermont. Why did you vote for him?
Well, first of all, Trump himself is going to be on the drill, baby, drill. You heard him say that last night, and I totally oppose that and will continue to do it. Second, and that's true for whoever is going to be the secretary. There's two things about Burgum that were okay. And one is that he was a big proponent of wind when he was governor of North Dakota. And the second thing, he's in charge of national parks. And I'm actually, and he's very, very supportive of our national parks, and they're under jeopardy. So those were the two factors I took into account. But absolutely, I will continue to support the Vermont approach that puts an emphasis on clean energy. Mm-hmm. But that's a fight that we're all going to have with the Trump administration, no matter who's in what cabinet position.
Help me understand this here. So it seems like President Trump's goal with the tariffs is in part to boost domestic manufacturing, and he also wants to increase domestic fossil fuel production. So why are you opposed to the tariffs, but support an interior secretary who does hold those same goals?
Well, what I just said to you is that whoever the secretary is, with Burgum, it's whoever that person is going to be trying to pursue the policies of the Trump administration, which I oppose.
Yeah.
The two things that were important to me with Burgum is that he is at least a voice in favor of wind, and he is a voice that has been very much in support of our national parks, both of which are under attack.
So in his speech last night, President Trump repeatedly referenced the slashing of the federal bureaucracy that's occurred over the last 6 weeks. What cuts to federal agencies most concern you or think you think will most affect Vermonters?
Well, first of all, the real question here is it's not just what he's doing, it's how he is doing it. You know, all of us are in favor of making whatever our operation is. It can be our own household. It can be the functions of state government and certainly the functions of federal government, make them more efficient. But what President is doing with Musk and Doge is really trying to get as high a body count by firing people without any plan. That's the goal. And what they're by going about it that way, where they send out these emails to people telling them they're fired because their performance has been bad, even though it's a person who's just had a very, very positive performance evaluation. That indicates to me that it's not on the level that they want to, quote, improve. They basically want to destroy.
We've heard recently from Vermont's Attorney General Charity Clark, who has been involved in lawsuits against the Trump administration. I think she's involved with six now. For Democratic senators such as yourself who oppose the tactics of the Trump administration, do you have recourse to oppose them? What can you do?
Well, here's the situation, and it's very frustrating for a lot of Vermonters and a lot of Americans. And we've got 53 Republicans in the Senate, and they're on board with what Trump is doing. We've got 47 votes. We've got a few votes short in the House, and you've got a president who's, in my view, on a lawless rampage. And he's got Republicans in the House and Senate right now who are looking the other way, even though the president is interfering and grabbing congressional authority under Article 1, basically the power of the purse. The president is completely disregarding congressional appropriations. Now, why is that important? It's important, first of all, because if we've appropriated to have people working at Social Security to answer the phone, we've appropriated funds at the Department of Agriculture to help Vermont farmers. That money should be spent and those services should be provided. But the real issue here is, will Congress assert its independent authority as a check and balance under our system of checks and balances? And what's very alarming to me is I'm seeing a willingness on the part of my Republican colleagues to capitulate and cede that authority.
So with Democrats in the minority in Washington, what do you think is the best way for you and your colleagues to represent the constituents who voted for you and against Trump?
From a congressional standpoint, the more we can, in a concrete way, show what the impact of these actions are. Like, for instance, folks, when they call Social Security, they're on the phone for like 30 minutes. President Trump just fired 7,000 people. The Department of Agriculture in Vermont, who helps our farmers when they have a contract with the federal government, the federal government under Trump is stiffing the farmer, not paying what they agreed to in a signed contract to do. So my view is that the more Bernie and Becca and I can bring to people's attention the concrete actions, then people say, wait a minute, that's not about cutting. That's like stiffing a farmer with whom you've got a contract. The more that gets out, I think even folks who voted for Trump will say, hey, wait, that's not what it is that we were doing. Second, litigation. And that's why I'm glad our attorney general is being so cooperative with the other attorney generals around the country who are challenging in court. And we're having some success there.
So when people call you and say, what's going on? Why can't you stop it? What do you say back?
Well, number one, I try to hear them and connect with them and respect that point of view because it shouldn't be happening. And number two is just a frank discussion about the reality of what Trump is doing and the effect of elections having consequences where we have 47 votes instead of 51 here in the Senate. Yeah. And we've got Republicans who continue to be totally supportive of whatever it is Trump is doing. Now, in the Senate, I'm doing all I can to talk to my colleagues. When I talk to them about what is happening with Medicaid in Vermont, you know, we have 2 out of 3 of our nursing home beds are paid for by Medicaid. And I talk to my colleagues and say, ask, get the facts about what's the case in their state. That's me attempting to bring to their attention, if they don't know it already, how the immediate impact for them is going to be the same as it is for Vermonters.
Senator, I'm sure you're very tired of hearing these words, as are all Americans, but yet again, a government shutdown is looming next Friday, March 14th, to be exact. And Republicans need some Democratic support to pass a funding bill. What do you need to see in a funding deal to vote yes?
Well, number one, we shouldn't be at this place. So it's an extraordinary statement that we do have a Republican majority where it is their responsibility to put the bill on the table. And there's enormous division, especially in the House among the Republicans. But number two, I've always believed that we have to keep the lights on in government. What my preference is that we get a budget passed. That's the basic function that we have a responsibility to do. Now, I say we, but really it's the majority party that has to put that together. And there has not been a presentation of any bill or proposal by Speaker Johnson, who leads the House, and by Senator Thune, who leads the Senate. So the question is pending. We don't even have anything to react to. Now, the second thing is the shutdown is really, really detrimental. Because, and this is a fear I have with Trump as the president. Elon Musk says he wants a shutdown. He doesn't care. You know, you turn the lights out, and he gets to fire people and do whatever he wants.
So you're saying this is a totally different way of doing business in Washington than you've seen before?
It is. And, you know, what you saw even last night with the speech that the president gave, it was really, you know, another campaign speech. But our president, the president of the United States, you run in a partisan election. But at the end of the day, the person elected is supposed to represent all of us. And it's supposed to represent the democratic ideals that our country was founded on. And the major role that our presidents have always assumed is the responsibility and the opportunity, actually, to help unify the country. You know, and that can be after a very contentious and very closely divided election. They reach out. And what we see with President Trump, particularly in that address last night, is that he makes a different decision, not about unifying, but intensifying those differences.
In his speech to Congress last night, President Trump spent some time touting the investments of foreign companies in U.S. chip manufacturing plans. The semiconductor manufacturing industry is a prosperous one and a growing one here in Vermont. I mean, there's companies like GlobalFoundries who are getting billions of dollars of federal funding through the CHIPS Act, which passed during the Biden administration. And Trump started lobbying these international companies to build plants in the U.S. during his first administration. Could focusing on this sector of the economy be perhaps one place where leaders on both sides of the aisle agree?
Well, we did. I mean, that's what the CHIPS Act was. And I was shocked, really, last night that President Trump was so critical of Biden and also the CHIPS Act and said he wanted to repeal it. I mean, that was pretty bizarre to me because you had Republican senators playing a major role in getting the CHIPS Act passed. And what that is about is something that I think is important and where there could be bipartisan cooperation. We want to do more manufacturing in the United States. We want to do that for the jobs, but we also want to do it for security of supply chains. So that was another example of where, why in the world is Trump attacking Biden? And why is he attacking the CHIPS Act? We've got these challenges like the affordability of healthcare, the cost to housing, folks without childcare. These are things that the president didn't even mention. And these are affordability questions that are really important for Vermont, but they're important for folks in Kansas. They're important for folks in Iowa. But Trump is keeping everybody at bay, and he's made this decision a kind of go it alone, my way or the highway.
That was Senator Peter Welch in Washington, D.C. We spoke this morning. What are your thoughts on what you just heard from Vermont's junior senator? You can email your thoughts to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org, just like Mike in Dummerston just did. He wrote us an email and said that for him, the president's address last night was hard to watch. What left Mike feeling most frustrated by the end was watching our elective representatives from Vermont sit idly by and not use the opportunity to loudly voice their opposition to what the administration is doing, as Representative Al Green of Texas did. In my opinion, Mike writes, Democrats are by and large failing to meet this moment. Please do something, or at least let us know that there is some plan in place other than waiting for the next election cycle. President Donald Trump has instituted 25% across-the-board tariffs on imports from Canada and Mexico. Canada has promised to respond with tariffs of their own on imports from the U.S. Here is President Trump during his address to Congress last night.
We pay subsidies to Canada and to Mexico of hundreds of billions of dollars, and the United States will not be doing that any longer. We're not going to do it any longer.
The cost of this trade war may soon be felt by consumers on both sides of the border. In Montreal, the Gazette reporter Jacob Sarabrin has been closely following these changes. He joins us now. Hi, Jacob.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for being with us today. And here with me in the Vermont Edition studio with a domestic perspective is Vermont's Secretary of Commerce, Lindsay Curley. Secretary, welcome.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Yes, glad to have you in the studio with us today. Secretary Curley, I just did my best to very broadly cover the tariffs that just went into effect yesterday. But can you give us a little bit more detail? What's changed in terms of these U.S.-Canada tariffs over the past couple weeks?
Yes. So as you know, a month ago, these tariffs were announced and then they were pulled back after negotiations were, in our president's words, successful with both Canada and Mexico in terms of national security. So as you understand, they were being tariffs were being used as a tool to shore up our borders. So, but as of midnight, a couple days ago here now, that they went back into effect. They went into effect, I should say. And so what we're seeing is a 25% tariff on imports from Canada and Mexico on most things, and 10% on energy.
Mm. And Jacob, how is Canada responding?
Well, Canada's responded in a few ways. The Canadian federal government in Ottawa has announced counter tariffs of its own. That's about $145 billion Canadian dollars. So that's about $100 billion U.S. dollars of imports that's going to be subject to 25% tariffs. Here, they're starting with about a fifth of that, about $30 billion worth of Canadian U.S. goods are going to be tariffed immediately. And then the next one is going to come in 21 days. So that initial wave of tariffs are things like, oranges, I think tomatoes are on that list, some meat products, bakery goods, cosmetics. And then in the next phase, it's going to include things like cars and be much broader. Here in Quebec specifically, the provincial government has said they're going to put a 25% penalty on U.S. companies that are bidding for contracts with the provincial government. And here in Quebec, we have government-owned liquor stores, similar to the state stores that some states have. And so here in Quebec, and this is true pretty much across the country, they've pulled American liquor off of the shelves of the government-owned liquor stores. And there's a question now about electricity as well. And so it hasn't been ruled out. Our premier here in Quebec has said that they're looking at potentially adding a tariff on exports of energy. On Ontario, they're talking about that as well. And of course, You know, Vermont is a major recipient of Quebec electricity, but Quebec also sells on electricity spot markets and has contracts that haven't come into effect, or, you know, that are in effect, but they haven't completed building the supply lines yet to Massachusetts and to New York City.
Mm. Yes, Vermont gets a lot of its electricity from Hydro-Quebec. Secretary Curley, talk to us about the potential impact on Vermonters' electricity bills. This is something that Senator Peter Welch brought up in our conversation today.
Yes, we do. We get 20 to 25% of our electricity from the Canadian market, and the remainder is like renewable sources from in-state and a little bit from New York as well. And so that is a concern. Obviously, Vermonters, the way the rates work and the contracts here in the States, it would take a little bit for Vermonters to start to feel that here at home. But absolutely is a concern of ours, something that we're looking at. And more broadly, energy, as we mentioned, you know, more than 50% of our energy right now does come from Canada. So those, depending on whether it's, you know, we talked about it, electricity, like I said, it would take a little bit longer for the impact to hit consumers, residents, and businesses here. But you have natural gas, you have home heating oil, you have gasoline, right? Those things will all hit differently. Gasoline, for example, or fuel oil that's pulled out of Canada are going to be more immediate. If you have a fuel oil contract, you might be a little bit insulated from that in the short term. But ultimately, if a company continues to pull it out of Canada, they have to pay the tariff. Or if there's a retaliatory measure, then that's going to ultimately be directed to the consumer at some point.
Mm. And Secretary Curley, I should also mention that you're leading an interagency task force to examine the consequences of these tariffs, not just on Canada, but on Mexico and China as well. Jacob, you know, we're talking about the political ramifications here and the trade war that is sort of beginning right now. But at a more like cultural level, how are people talking about these tariffs on the ground in Canada and Trump's actions? Is it a major topic of conversation?
Yeah, Michaela, it really is. It's, you know, I think what's really gotten under the skin of Canadians is this 51st state talk. You know, when they, you know, during the first Trump administration, for about a year, there were tariffs on aluminum and steel. There was a, you know, a trade action against Bombardier. That's a major manufacturer of airplanes here in Montreal, a major employer here. But it didn't feel as, I think people didn't take it quite as personally. You know, it was business. And, you know, even if we disagreed, it was sort of, you know, there's talks, there's negotiations. That's what happens. But right now, what we're seeing, you know, really across the country, even here in Quebec, which is normally not, you know, a place where you see the Canadian maple leaf flag flying all over the place. You know, people like our blue and white fleur-de-lis flag here a bit more most of the time. But when I walk around my neighborhood, I'm seeing Canadian flags flying on homes all of a sudden. So there's been people have taken real offense at this 51st state talk. You know, people are talking about buying Canadian, about avoiding American goods. You can see lists going around on the internet of Canadian manufacturers, of Canadian-owned companies in certain grocery stores. They started putting labels on products that are made in Canada, you know, bigger labels saying, you know, oh, this is a Canadian product. So there's been a real sort of groundswell of patriotism in Canada. And it's changing our political dialogue. You know, right now we've got a prime minister who said he will resign. There's a leadership race for the Liberal Party of Canada happening right now. The Conservatives were the favorite to win the next Canadian election. Now the Liberals are picking up steam as they sort of you know, wrap themselves in the flag, and the Conservatives have pivoted to a Canada first platform. So it's really, it's led to a real reaction here, and people are feeling it very strongly. There's a lot of talk, and I don't know how much of this is actually happening, and these are things we'll all take time to see the real effects. A lot of talk about people canceling vacations in the U.S. and traveling within Canada or going to other parts of the world.
Mm. Vermont Secretary of Commerce Lindsay Curley, hearing that Canada First response, what's going on there right now, and that preference towards Canadian goods that Jacob Sarabrin has been reporting on, does that cause you concern for Vermont's economy?
Oh, absolutely. Beyond my concern about the economy, it, you know, makes us personally feel pain because we've worked really hard to build our relationships with our neighbors to the north. And, you know, Jacob, I feel the anxiety. We feel it here in Vermont being so close. We never feel like there's a line in the sand. As you mentioned, we don't see that line. We feel ourselves as a region. And, you know, while these tariffs aren't directly placed on tourists, these economic policies can influence travel decisions, right? And so we have 4 to 5% of our tourists, our visitors each year come from Canada, as well as of our imports, 67% come from Canada. So it's a big deal. This is a very big deal for us, and it's disappointing. One thing I will say is that, you know, we are in contact with Canadian officials, the Canadian government. Governor Scott was the first U.S. governor to meet in Quebec with Premier Legault, the Quebec premier. He, a week and a half ago, met in Washington, D.C. with Premier Ford from Ontario. We have strong relationships and continue to have strong relationships. And while I realize that at the national level, it's being eroded and somewhat out of our control, I will say that we're working very hard to stay in contact and to make sure that we are working as hard as we can to continue to keep the relationship as strong as we can here at home in Vermont. And we'll do everything that we can. We're talking with our Canadian businesses that are operating in Vermont, as well as our companies that are working exporting into Canada, knowing that they are also very concerned about, like I said, the retaliatory, the, you know, reverse impacts of these tariffs.
Mm. Let's go to Jacob, who's in Williston. Jacob, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling in. I'm a builder in the state, and I've been on the phone a couple times this morning with some colleagues of mine in the field. And there's sort of a bomb going off slowly in our field right now, where multiple projects have been canceled or postponed. And, you know, just the other day in VT Digger, there was an article about a Quebec sawmill that sells a lot of wood to a Vermont timber framer. And that Vermont timber framer is going to have to buy their wood locally, which is great, except for we have a finite number of trees and sawyers in the state. And I'm currently estimating the cost of a timber frame, whereas I was going to be buying from a local sawyer, but my timeline probably just got blown away because that sawyer is now going to be overwhelmed. So I guess I'm just highlighting that it's scary and there's a lot of unknowns. And another big piece is I think a lot of builders will probably need to mothball some personnel or just let them go. Hmm. And right now we're talking about the cost of goods, but I think the impact of local unemployment is going to rear its ugly head really soon. Hmm. So what do you think about that? I'll take your answer off the air. Bye.
Secretary, what were your thoughts hearing that caller's concerns?
Yeah, you know, I'm a former business owner, and what I remember most about being in business is you want predictability and stability. And right now that is really hard to offer a business owner or anybody because there's a lot of change happening. And so Jacob the builder, I hear you, and I would say to you that, you know, this is what is so difficult right now, because when people lose their discretionary income or it declines, you're right, they start to make decisions about where they can cut. And it does concern me because right now we have this housing crisis. We need more housing. And I don't know whether you're building commercial or you're building housing, but what we don't need right now is for people to stop building the very, you know, much needed housing that we've been seeking. And so if we do have a loss in discretionary income because people are absorbing that to pay for their energy increases or other things that they can't control, I do very much worry about job losses or cuts that will lead to job losses. So right now in the short term, it's not a great outlook. And that's why you are hearing economists saying that this is not good for the short term. In the longer term, I mean, sure, you could argue that there could be some opportunity to bring back some of those timber, you know, the sawmills and the timber framing companies and bring them back. But as you know, those take time and it takes investment, infrastructure investment and build out. And you don't, you know, do that overnight. So, you know, I think that we are in for some really challenging days ahead. I will say this, you know, I love to offer some hope. There was an interview done last night by the U.S. Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick, and he did say that the president was negotiating with Canada and Mexico last night. And so there could be an announcement, and I don't know what that might be. But again, if the way it was presented last night in his speech, the negotiations hadn't landed where he wanted, or the actions hadn't landed where he wanted in terms of the shoring up our national security. So I'm hopeful that maybe we can tamp this down, lower it, improve it. I don't know if it will come, and I can't make those promises. But again, this situation is so fluid, and you know, I'm just hoping that there can be some relief here for you and for all the people that are very anxious and understandably so about this.
800-639-2211 is our number if you'd like to weigh in. Jacob, Sarah, Brent, have you been focused in any way on the effects of these tariffs on the timber industry there in Quebec?
I haven't looked specifically at timber yet, but you know, that sentiment that I was hearing from Jacob is the same thing that I'm hearing so much from business owners here, this fear of uncertainty and the inability to, you know, to make plans for your business in an environment of uncertainty. And I think it really goes to, you know, the point that Lindsay made earlier about how, you know, until now, you know, that border has been, you know, for businesses, it's one that's crossed all the time. You know, something like 80% of Quebec's imports from the United States are inputs for industry that are then further transformed here and then often re-exported back to the States. I was, there's aerospace companies here in Quebec that have operations where they source from 47 U.S. states. There's so much interchange across that border, back and forth, that you know Quebec's largest export to the U.S. is aluminum that goes to U.S. factories where it's either further transformed or turned into cars, and you know that goes back and forth. And so there is this, you know, for decades now, there's been this North American economy that's been built, these North American supply chains where goods cross the border multiple times as they take advantage of, you know, cheap electricity in Quebec and, you know, certain skilled labor in certain parts of the U.S. And that's what, you know, clearly we're seeing with Jacob the Builder and his issues with lumber, that this is, you know, everyone's built their businesses around this trade, this interchange and the benefits that's brought everyone. And now all of a sudden that's, There's some questions around that, and that's very difficult.
Hmm. We just got an email from Connie, who's in Quebec, who writes, as a dual U.S. and Canadian citizen who did not vote for Trump, I am deeply saddened that Vermont will suffer from the tariffs and resulting boycotts of Vermont businesses. Vermont and California did not vote for Trump, but both will feel the impact of his irresponsible actions. As a Quebecer, I wish there was a way to avoid impacting states like Vermont that do not deserve it. We also got an email from Kevin in Burlington, who wrote to us in support of a boycott of Tesla in Vermont and across the world. Kevin wrote that such a boycott would impact Elon Musk's profits. Musk is the CEO of Tesla and currently leading the Department of Government Efficiency's efforts to slash the budgets of federal agencies. Secretary Curley, have you heard about any such boycotts going on in Vermont? Jacob talked about potential boycotts of American goods in Canada. Anything like that going on here?
I haven't specifically heard of that, but yeah. I mean, I can see where, you know, people would be thinking along those lines, but no, I haven't. And, you know, I think if somebody hasn't, you know, made a purchase yet, that's one thing, but there are folks that own those products that, you know, that could be kind of challenging to untangle from.
Yeah. How important, I guess, in both of your views, is the relationship between regional leaders here. Secretary, you talked about this a little bit earlier, talking about how Governor Scott has met with leaders in Quebec. Is there something that can be done to improve relationships at this regional level, or is this really kind of above everyone's heads right now?
Well, I think I do believe our relationships are very strong. The consul general from Boston for Quebec came to Burlington last Friday and met with our team, members of our team, as well as the Vermont Chamber of Commerce. They are very much wanting to work with us. They know that this is not our decision. We do not want a trade war with Canada. Vermont does not want this trade war. The governor has been very clear about that. The governor, as I mentioned, has these strong ties with the Canadian premiers in the areas where our state touches upon. And I think it's very important that we continue those conversations and we continue those relationships. But those relationships have been built over decades, and they've been built on trust and mutual respect. And so I think that, again, a lot of this is so far above us that we can't control, but we can control our own relationships here at home. And, you know, we've done really hard things in the past. When you think about COVID, we had some of the strictest travel restrictions. And that was probably a time in my most recent memory I can think about where it felt like we put this line in the sand that we didn't want to have either, but it was for, you know, personal health and safety. And we worked through it. And I know this is slightly different, but I hope that our Canadian friends know that, you know, we here in Vermont, we love them and we are still here for them and we still want to do business with them. And, you know, we'll be here and we'll have the same welcoming feeling and we'll work together as we can through this.
Mm. Well, Jacob, you're our Canadian representative today. What are your thoughts hearing Secretary Curley's statements there?
Well, as you know, it's nice to hear on a, you know, just a personal level. But I think it is, you know, something I've heard from our federal officials here. You know, I think it was Foreign Minister Melanie Joly who said, you know, the governors are our best allies. You know, and I remember, you know, I met Governor Scott shortly after he was elected because he came up to Montreal to, you know, to meet with businesses here, meet with officials here. You know, these are relationships that have been built for years and that have been developed. And we've seen, you know, in recent days, the governors of New York, of Connecticut, of Kentucky, of Pennsylvania, all speak out against the tariffs. And you know, I think they have a real sense of what's happening in their states and in their communities and how businesses are being affected in a very real way that, you know, I don't know if that always, you know, makes it to the understanding of the federal, you know, the federal officials.
Mm. Let's go to the phones here. We have Vittorio calling in from Quebec. Vittorio, go ahead.
Okay, good day. I was calling in. I left a message on the wrong number.
Oh, that's all right.
But then I collected the right number. And I wanted to remind you that when Bush was around, there was a movement in your state about Vermont joining Canada. I don't know if it rings a bell.
Yes, it does. Vittorio, I'm so sorry. We're having a little trouble hearing you, but I can make out what you're saying about this movement many years ago for Vermont to join Canada. Secretary Curley, do you remember this?
It was a little while ago. I kind of remember. Somewhat.
Yeah. It sounds like it's not on the board right now, but.
It hasn't been up for discussion, but I was a little younger then.
Thanks for reminding us of that, yeah. Though, Vittorio. I'm sorry we couldn't hear your connection very well. Judith is in Vergennes. Judith, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'm just wondering how the mechanics of collecting tariffs works. We keep hearing it will cost the consumer more, of which I am one. Of course, we all are. But how does the government benefit from the money? Where does the money go?
Thank you, Judith. Secretary, could you give us a brief explainer on how tariffs work?
Sure. A tariff is a tax. So essentially, you know, it will go to the government. And then, you know, in this situation, what I don't know yet because this is fluid is where, you know, the our president has determined that tax will be applied. And, you know, I think he has said that his goal is to lower, you know, costs for Americans in other ways. But I don't know specifically where that tax will be applied. But that's how the tariff works. It's essentially a tax.
Thank you. What are you going to be keeping an eye on in the weeks ahead, Jacob? What stories are you working on related to these tariffs?
That is a big question. I'm working on a lot of stories right now related to the tariffs. Talking to some manufacturers here in Montreal today about how they're being affected. You know, spoke to a guy who makes jeans. He's the last denim manufacturer in Canada, I believe. And
that sounds like a public radio story if I've ever heard one. You got to file that to us too.
And he's optimistic that this won't last, you know, and because the thing is, the tariffs are a tax. And so if that has to be paid, it's paid by the importer. He's got a store in New York. And so if he's, you know, importing his products, exporting them from Canada, importing them to the States, he's going to pay that tax. He's going to decide whether he's going to increase his prices or not. His customers aren't going to be willing to pay 25% more. He can't necessarily take a 25% hit on his profits or his margin. And so he's optimistic that this won't last. I spoke to someone else who's seeing opportunities to sell more within Canada. That's certainly something we're hearing about here. But I'm also looking at how this is, you know, planning to talk about how this affects the aviation industry, which is such a big industry here in Quebec, and one that is so integrated with the United States. So we're going to be looking at that. It's just something that, just across the board, and it is something that's, changing every day. And so it's the type of story where you start in the morning thinking you're going to write something, and then at, 1, 2, 3 in the afternoon, you have to change, yeah. Change everything.
I know the feeling. Jacob Sarabrin is a reporter for the Gazette in Montreal who's been covering the tariff's potential effects on Quebec. Jacob, we will keep an eye on all of your reporting. It sounds fascinating. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Michaela.
We're also joined by Lindsay Curley, the Vermont Secretary of Commerce, who is leading an interagency task force to examine the consequences of these tariffs on our region. Secretary, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me here.